Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
Itai Flesher, journalist, Australian living in Jerusalem. Itai, you live in a very interesting part of the world, a part of the world that's getting more and more interesting. Yeah, let's just talk Israeli news, as this is the Israel segment. Yeah, maybe your take from a journalist perspective on the main story of the day, which I'm sure is annexation.
Yes, so before I get to annexation, I just want to tell you a bit about coronavirus, because in Israel, annexation is not on the news at all. I know this might surprise people from outside the country, because outside the country, you know, when you if you Google Israel, that's all you hear. But, you know, if you watch the news each night, it's the seventh or eighth story. It's really Israel started very well with the corona crisis. You know, we shut down very early, but in the last day, we've had 714 new cases. Tragically, a 19-year-old Israeli girl died from the coronavirus yesterday, the youngest victim so far of the flu. And we've also now looking at, you know, reshutting down things that were open in the past. So definitely, you know, in terms of what's going on in the public conversation here and what the concern is of most Israelis, it's definitely corona. There was actually a survey done by Channel 12 News, and they said, what's the most important thing you want the government to deal with? 69% of Israelis said the economic crisis in response to the corona. 15% said the health crisis. Only 4% said annexation.
Absolutely fascinating. We'll get there in a moment. I just want to stay on the corona issue. Very early on in this whole process, I'd read an article, an opinion piece, stating that Israel had dealt with the issue so superbly well, the lockdown had worked, etc., etc. But already then, they had pointed out that given the Israeli mentality, as the author knew it, he said, once you've let them out, you'll never get them back in again. Just interested, your take on Israelis living in Israel. Do you think a second lockdown is feasible and could possibly even work?
You know, I think that's very true. I mean, you know, we, from March until Pesach, gradually there were more restrictions until, for Pesach, we were literally not allowed to leave the house for 24 hours. And then since the end of Pesach, it's gradually been opening up. More and more things have been open. In Israel, it's a law now that you have to wear a mask when you leave the house. And you can get a 500 shekel fine if you're outside without a mask. And I think a lot of people feel like, I wear the mask, I'm invincible. You know, like, once I've got that on, I can't get it. I can't give it to anyone as long as I wear a mask. The problem is that, one, most people on the street wear the mask on their chin. To the best of my knowledge, the virus is not transmitted through the chin, so I'm not sure how much wearing a mask on your chin protects you. It does prevent you from getting a fine, though, I will say, but it doesn't actually stop the spread.
Oh, all right.
And the second thing is obviously the gatherings that are not happening outside, whether that be in someone's home, in a social occasion, you know, those sorts of things where people feel like once they're comfortable, you know, around a dinner table or that sort of thing, that all the masks come off, everyone hugs and kisses and, you know, all those things happen again. The Knesset actually just today green-lighted a very controversial bill allowing the Shin Bet, the security service, to start tracking Israelis. There's a big problem now. The people that are found to have COVID, we don't know where they've been the last 2 weeks, who they gave it to. So the hope is that this Shin Bet tracking will, as soon as someone is found positive, we can straight away know all the people they've been in contact with in the last 2 weeks and tell them to stay at home for 2 weeks. There's a lot of ethical issues with that, because you would be tracking an entire population without their consent. So I don't know if it's necessarily going to get through the Knesset, but this is, it did get a go ahead from the Foreign Affairs Committee today.
So going back to the annexation issue, how did you possibly account for the fact that such an incredibly serious issue is so low down on the Israeli list of priorities?
Look, there's a million Israelis unemployed now. You know, we had before Corona, with Israel's unemployment rate was 3%. It's now 20%. In Eilat, it's 45%. In Jerusalem, it's 35%. You know, the cities with the big tourism, you know, that's, everyone's just concerned about having a job, being able to feed their families. And annexation has a lot of risks. Whether you support it or don't support it, I think everyone knows that it comes with a lot of risks in terms of Israel's relationship with many other countries in the world, and potential sanctions or boycotts that might come as a result of that. And a lot of people feel like, is now the time, even if you believe that Israel has a right to assert that sovereignty over Judea and Samaria, a lot of people would say now is not the time to do it. Specifically, one of the biggest people who are sort of blocking this is Benny Gantz, you know, the alternative prime minister, who said in a cabinet meeting that dealing with the coronavirus has to be the priority for Israel at the moment. And he's saying, you know, with 1 million unemployed people, my voters expect me to be dealing with this as a priority of supporting people to get back to work, reopening businesses, providing economic support for people who don't have a job, and annexation doesn't interest them. The person that it does interest a lot is obviously the Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, mainly because he ran on three elections with this as really his key promise, and he feels like, you know, as someone that wants to stay true to his word, he promised the voters that this would happen. It's in the coalition agreement that it can happen from the 1st of July. And so he feels like he very much needs to push for it to be loyal to his base that voted for him to do this.
Absolutely fascinating. And I just hope somewhere in this he's taking into account the effect that it will have on diaspora Jews. But that's another point. Mm. You mentioned something also interesting. You spoke about Gantz and his supporters. Once again, read an article saying that were there to be an election tomorrow, Gantz's Kahol Lavan would be lucky to get 10 seats. I don't know if that's true enough, but I'm thinking of the game of Survivor, outwitted, outplayed, and out whatever the other one is.
You know, saying keep your friends close and your enemies closer. Well, Netanyahu is very much a master of that. He did it with Kahlon, and now he's done it with Gantz. You know, Gantz's whole appeal for voters was that he was not Netanyahu. And now that he's in the Netanyahu administration, you know, he has very little appeal. The last poll had him on 9 seats. So I think, I think his political career is very much over. Whenever the next election happens, I think that's clear to everyone. And the only way that he can, become popular is to convince Israelis that he's an alternative to Benjamin Netanyahu, which is not doing very well at the moment. There was a very embarrassing scene yesterday where there was a cabinet meeting.
Yeah.
Netanyahu spoke for a couple of minutes. Gantz was sitting next to him. Gantz starts, takes off his mask, about to talk, and then Netanyahu says, okay, you can go, like, meeting over, like, and Gantz does this face of, like, I'm the alternative prime minister. You didn't even let me speak to the media. It's really humiliating. But Gantz is, a lot of people say Gantz has been played by Netanyahu, who's a real master politician, and that's why he's very popular. And also I'd say, you know, Netanyahu is on trial at the moment. You've got to remember he's the first sitting Israeli prime minister to be charged with bribery, fraud, and breach of trust. And unlike other prime ministers, he didn't resign. You know, he wants to fight this court case as prime minister. And I think annexation for him is very important politically because it takes the focus away from the trial and all of the information that comes out from all the witnesses and documents that are being released all the time to the media, and focusing on annexation changes that narrative, and it shows him as a doer. I will add something interesting that happened yesterday that probably didn't get picked up in a lot of press, was that for years Israelis have said the Palestinians are not a partner for peace, that they're not trustworthy, and yesterday the Palestinians released their own peace plan, and this peace plan agreed to negotiate with Israel based on the 1967 borders, and even agreed to minor land swaps, meaning that Israel could keep certain parts of the territory of the West Bank in exchange for giving territory to the Palestinians as part of Israel. This letter was sent to the Quartet, the UN, the US and Russia. And I think the Palestinians are trying to say, we don't want annexation to happen unilaterally. We want to negotiate a solution with Israel, and to say that they're prepared to do that. I don't know if this is a bluff or if it's something to be taken seriously, but it is showing, because I can't remember the last time the Palestinians put forward a peace offer in
2 days before
something like
that.
Yeah.
Interesting, the timing of it. And
so,
I mean, we're out of time.
The timing is very convenient.
I'm so sorry we're out of time, because I really wanted you to address the issue of the right of return for refugees, because I always find that quite a disingenuous argument. How can you talk about, peace when you're insisting on that? But we are out of time. And Itai, thank you so much for stepping in. And that will not be the last time we speak to you. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you very much. Look after yourself.